There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Hello and welcome to the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast, a roundup of the best bits of today's show from Thursday, the 13th of February. We're talking real estate.
We built this city. We built this city on rock and roll. We built this city. We built this city on rock and roll.
Two cities in particular, Dubai, MR Properties, synonymous with real estate development in this place, and down the road in Abu Dhabi, the same is true of Al Dar. And within the past 24 hours, we've had the full year financial results from both of these organisations. Now, we'll hear from the finance chief at Al Dar in a second, but essentially they both did really well. I would almost say surprisingly well, given that it's been a relatively soft real estate market. Don't take my word for it. This is Tamer Khan. He's with Knight Frank, the big real estate consultancy and brokerage firm. This is what he had to say.
I think the wider market still has a bit longer to go, but I think there are certain segments within the market, if we're talking resi alone, which are doing a lot better and which are still seeing pretty decent levels of performance. You mentioned the likes of MR, likes of Al Dar. They've still had very strong results. If you look at, well, you know, the revenues, albeit slightly down, but profit margins are still very high for these developers.
So how do they do it? Because this week we saw Damac, big real estate developer here, reporting its first loss for a decade. Yesterday we had Dehar, another one of the developers' listed company. It did okay in 2019, but it's reported 1.5 billion dirhams of accumulated losses going back over the past decade or so. So what's going right at MR, and in particular Al Dar? Well, our producer Mohammed Suleiman has been speaking with Greg Fewer, who's the chief financial officer at Al Dar. This is what he told us.
You know, we've seen some pockets of just exceptional performance, you know, coming from, for example, our hospitality business, which benefits from event activity, saw 30% growth in net operating income. We've seen an 80% growth in the profitability from our schools business. And we've more than, 500% increase in the profitability coming from our services businesses, Khidma and Provis. And really, you know, these are areas of our portfolio, which is large and diverse, that is directly benefiting from some of the economic development activities that the government has underway. So they have a program in place to go out and bring events into Abu Dhabi. For example, you saw the UFC signed up to a multi-year deal with the government of Abu Dhabi, and we had a very successful UFC weekend here in Abu Dhabi this year, which benefited our hotels, brought more customers in, increased the profit we make from them.
We're talking about Al Dar and MR, of course, as separate entities. Al Dar in Abu Dhabi, MR in Dubai. Here's the thing, though. A couple of years ago, March 2018, they announced plans for a 30 billion dirham strategic partnership. What happened to that? Because we haven't heard a huge amount. Well, that's one of the questions that Mohammed Suleiman put to Greg Fewer.
Yeah, I mean, look, the two projects that sit underneath that joint venture are still progressing at pace. I mean, the beachfront development in Dubai, successfully has been, progressively launching plots into the market. And, MR has been managing that very capably. And then with the Abu Dhabi side of that, Sadiq Grove, also in the design phase, a little bit earlier in development than the beachfront one, also progressing at pace through design and soon to be into implementation.
That's Greg Fewer. He's the chief finance officer at Al Dar Properties. Now, one of our other top stories this morning is green energy. We've seen big changes at one of the world's biggest oil or energy companies, BP, and the new chief executive wants to do this.
It's not easy being green. Seems you blend in with so many other ordinary things.
Kermit the Frog, it's not easy being green, particularly when your main business is getting oil out of the ground and selling it. That is not the greenest of pursuits, but Bernard Looney is the new boss at BP, and he says that they can be carbon neutral by 2050. Couple of things. One is more green energy, the likes of solar. They're investing in that. They're investing in batteries. They're going to plant an awful lot of trees to offset the carbon that they do produce. This is him, Bernard Looney, the new boss at BP, explaining. We'll hear from him in a second on why the company is changing. But first of all, his defence of energy companies, which get a huge amount of flack, and we know that. His defence of energy companies and the benefit that they have for society.
The energy we produce improves and changes lives. It heats the homes we live in. It lights the schools that educate our children, and it powers the hospitals that keep us healthy. And energy has opened up the world for many of us, allowing us to travel further and faster. And in recent years, energy has also helped connect us like never before.
So, he's a staunch defender of the energy industry. You'd expect that. He's a lifer with BP, 49 years old, used to head their upstream division, pumping oil and pumping gas. But he does acknowledge that they have to change. He says some of the critics that they have, some of the protests that we've been seeing, people have a valid point and companies like BP need to listen and they need to change.
But we are now at a moment in time when energy's role, specifically our industry's role in society, is being questioned like never before. Activists are calling on people around the world to join a global climate strike against fossil fuel use. Our response as an industry must not be to close ranks. We may disagree on the action being demanded, yet we share the concern for the planet.
That's Bernard Looney of BP. Tom, mixed reactions from various people who have a stake in this industry.
Yeah, look, obviously Greenpeace activists protesting outside BP's headquarters on the very first day of the new chief executive's role. And it comes with, you know, you can understand the concerns of climate campaigners. However, it could also be deemed to be a little bit cynical. You know, the very fact that he is... one of the first to sort of put his head above the parapet and make these very bold claims. And therefore, when you consider the other majors, your ExxonMobils, your Royal Dutch Shells, Total, Chevrons, Eni's amongst others, you know, that they're not making the same pledges as well. So for him to make a similar pledge, I think is bold, and therefore we can't be too cynical about it. If he wants to make a change, so be it. He's already starting to make a few changes in terms of the infrastructure of the company, which in itself is something of revolution. As you mentioned earlier, he used to be the head of upstream.
Yeah.
And traditionally, what we've always had upstream and downstream in companies like this. He's decided he's doing away with this, which again is bold for a man who's been with that company throughout his entire life, a lifer, as it were. He's getting rid of all of that and he's bringing in these four new business groups. So he's obviously thinking outside the box. He's going to bring in production and operations, customers and products, gas and low carbon energy, and then innovation and engineering. So that last segment is going to hold a quarter of the influence of the company. So on the one side, I'd like to say to the campaigners, look, just give him a chance, you know, let him try and get a few of his policies in place. One of the other reasons I think you can be cynical is not the first time you've heard oil barons making such sentiments and then nothing come of it. Thinking back to Lord Brown back in what, the late 1990s, 70s or thereabouts, talking about, and to be fair, he made that link between carbon emissions and global warming and said, look, we've got our part to play. But not a huge amount has changed since then, has there? And it's been quite a while.
Well, Siobhan wrote in earlier saying, remember John Brown's rebranding of BP in the early 2000s to not British Petroleum, but Beyond Petroleum.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah. Was that a proper was that a rebrand of the company, or was that just a sort of initiative that they were going with?
Bit of both.
Okay. And that really didn't sort of kick on, did it? I mean, it has, and there were some really cool TV commercials produced
on the back of it. Yeah, very good, yeah.
But did we see any difference? I'm not sure. So I'm willing to give the benefit of the doubt to Mr. Looney. And say, look, you know, good on you. Good on you for taking action. It's easy to be cynical against oil bosses. Let's give him a little while to see if he can push through a few of these changes.
Well, someone who knows him is Ethna Trainor, Dubai-based oil correspondent. In fact, she's been in Cairo with him this week at an energy conference, but they do go back a few years. Spoke to Ethna last night and said, what do you think? Is this guy being sincere or is it just greenwashing?
Now, I met Bernard a few years ago, and indeed many times since, and I can tell you he's the real deal. He's a career BP man, he's sincere and he's passionate about what oil and gas has brought to the world, but he's also listening to current sentiment and responding in a way that places a company like BP as a very modern energy provider, more integrated and more focused, as he would say, and more importantly, positioning BP as part of the solution for a cleaner, greener world.
Ethna Trainer, Andy and others, thanks for your messages. Enough already with the Kermit comparisons. We hear you.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Let's talk real estate now. Tamor Khan is an associate partner with Knight Frank in the Middle East, big real estate brokerage. Morning, Tamor.
Good morning.
So much real estate to discuss this morning. Earnings from Aldar and MR yesterday and others this week. And you've got a new report out, haven't you, looking at the health or otherwise of the regional real estate market. Key takeaway for me was that prices are still falling in Dubai and Abu Dhabi, but you say there are little green shoots in Dubai. What's the story?
So, yes, we do have a new report out. I think last year was actually somewhat positive. You saw in Dubai a 26% increase in transaction volumes, despite the fact, as you say, price is still falling. But prices are starting to fall at a slower rate. In Dubai, resi prices are down around 6%. A year ago, you were looking more towards a 9% mark. In Abu Dhabi, it's more sort of towards 7.5%. So we are still seeing prices fall, but certain segments of the market, particularly the prime market, we're seeing prices now falling below the 1% mark. So there is some green shoots or recovery, as you say. That's just looking at resi.
Well, at the risk of mixing our horticultural metaphors, you say green shoots. I would say maybe we're clutching at straws here if prices are still falling, but they're falling at a lower rate. If that's all we've got to go on.
No, I do agree. I think the wider market still has a bit longer to go, but I think there are certain segments within the market, if we're talking resi alone, which are doing a lot better and which are still seeing pretty decent levels of performance. You mentioned the likes of MR, likes of Aldar. They've still had very strong results. If you look at, well, you know, the revenues, albeit slightly down, but profit margins are still very high for these developers.
So in terms of where these green shoots are, we talk about the real estate market, but of course it's many different real estate markets. Where are the bright spots?
I think there's still, if you're looking at the residential market, at the sort of top 5% of the market, there's still room there for developers to develop the right product, and we're seeing decent levels of take up on that side.
When you say the top 5%, what kind of price band are we talking about?
If we're looking at the apartment side, that's over sort of around the $1 million plus mark.
$1 million plus.
Yes, so yeah. About 3.67 million dirhams and so on. On that, that market is still, you know, relatively short supplied, which is something Dubai is not known for in recent times.
That's interesting, is it really?
Particularly in prime areas with that level of product, which is of international grade, you know, and has a service amenities with it, there is still room in the market, in our opinion. And, you know, we've seen quite substantial levels of increases in that market, which we track quite heavily. Last year, transaction volumes in that segment of the market increased by 61%.
That, and Knight Frank typically plays in this space, I think, obviously being as a relatively high-end real estate broker, probably not the place you come to buy a 400,000 dirham studio in international city.
We tend to, yes, service that end of the market more so around the world.
And when you talk about the prime areas where there's a lack of these luxury apartments, I'm thinking of downtown, I'm thinking of Palm Jumeirah. Where are you thinking?
Spot on.
Let's talk about Abu Dhabi. Prices are falling even faster in the capital than they are here. What's the story there?
I think Abu Dhabi is a bit different. Abu Dhabi doesn't have too much of a supply issue, really. There's about 8,500 units on resi coming on. There's about 166,000 square meters of commercial space coming on. Most of that actual commercial space is in sort of secondary areas, and it's built for owner occupation. The issue with Abu Dhabi is more so on the demand side of things. But I think there's been a lot of regulatory changes on the residential side, where you've seen the introduction of freehold on the 100% business ownership side coming in as well. I think as a result of that, we might see some shifts in demand, but I think there'll be short-term pain before there is long-term benefits to be had within the market there.
Love the word stabilisation. I think that comes as gratification to all owners of property in whatever form here. Bit worried, though, about delivery numbers for 2020, because if we have an issue of stabilisation now, there's no shortage of units yet to come online in 2020. Is that a cause for concern?
I think it is. I think you've got to look at it in two ways. I mean, if we're talking about Dubai, you're looking at resi-wise over 60,000 units on paper. We're probably going to see, you know, fewer units come to the market. But on a headline level, that is a bit of cause for concern. It does give to the market in terms of affordability. It does provide, you know, to types of units that people are actually able to afford across the market. And I think Dubai has changed quite heavily in the last 5 years. It's more sort of cities within the city today, rather than looking at the city as an overall market and then discussing that. I think a lot of this stock is coming up in newer, more developing areas. So it depends where you are, what you're looking for, for example, if you're an owner today.
Let's talk about yields and where we can get a good return. Both Tom and I own real estate here, have done for many, many years. And we've had good years and bad years. Yesterday, I asked a stockbroker if I gave him $1 million with Tom's money, where would he put it for a good return? And he told me things like Dubai Islamic Bank is giving a good yield. If, Tamar, I was to give you $1 million of Tom's money and said, invest this now and get me a good yield, a good return in Dubai, where would you stick that $1 million?
I would go for the more developed areas, more prime areas, because I think you'd want to, you know, there's yield figures which are close to 10%, but yield is a function of risk at the end of the day. So I'd happily take sort of 6.5%, or even 5% in the really, really prime areas, secure my income. And that on a global level is fairly unbeatable, where you don't have taxes or other associated
costs. And that's net, that's after I paid the...
That's gross.
Community fees.
Yes, that's gross. I would probably take about 1% off for that.
And if Tom's feeling risky, where are we going to put his $1 million for a 10% yield? Because if we get 10%, his $1 million is going to give him 100,000 at the end of this year, which would be nice, Tom, would it not?
It would be good, yeah. We'd take that. It's a lunch.
I think there's clearly a lot of new communities coming up, which are sort of more on the affordable side. If you're looking away towards the Al Hail Road and sort of behind that, that's where you're looking to see very much more significant levels. I think International City is still the highest yielding product, but it's also, you know, trickier to maintain occupancy in those locations.
Tamar, great talking to you as ever. Appreciate you joining us bright and early this morning. Tamar Khan, Associate Partner with Knight Frank. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-sized Business Breakfast. Newsmakers.
The movers and shakers shaping your world.
And I'm afraid, Tom, that the coronavirus making headlines today.
Yeah, it's just a story that I've been following throughout the course of the morning. And I was just saying to you off air, it's one of those ones that, you know, how it just gains traction throughout the morning. And that certainly seems to have been the tenet of what's being reported this morning. So what do we know? Coronavirus cases have risen sharply. 242 people died in a single day yesterday. I said coronavirus. We should be calling it now COVID-19. It's been given its new name, isn't it? Almost 50,000 cases of COVID-19 now being treated in the Hubei province alone, most of them in the city of Wuhan. I suppose the worrying things for me here, numbers. We were talking coronavirus before it was given the name COVID at the beginning of the week. We were talking about the fact that, yeah, it was going through a tough time, but hopefully we would reach a peak during the week and then we would start to see a bit of a dip off. We haven't. In fact, if anything, we've seen something of an escalation, not just in the numbers, but also in the terminology and the language. Whereas before we talked a lot about one city, Wuhan, now we're talking about an entire province. Thoughts obviously for China, and obviously a huge amount of support from the United Arab Emirates, from the governments and the authorities here. It's the knock-on effects, though. It's the impact that it's going to have around the world. You were just reporting there that the Mobile World Congress has had to cancel over in Barcelona. And that's significant for the industry, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It's a massive event. It really is a massive event. It takes place at the beginning of the year, but they've decided we just cannot hold it. And of course, clearly here in Dubai in particular, in the UAE in general, we have a lot of major international events and the organisers are going to be watching this very, very closely.
The UAE looking on in so many ways, not just because of the impact it's had on tourism, 1.6 million tourists from China last year, bolstering the coffers here in the UAE. It's a key market. It's a market that tourism authorities across the whole of the UAE, not just here in Dubai, have focused on heavily in recent times. And if you see a fall off from that, as we have done the last couple of weeks, that could be significant. But then something you know a lot better, oil. And an interesting OPEC coming out overnight and saying that coronavirus, or COVID-19 as we now need to references, is killing demand for oil. That's going to have an impact not just on the world, but significantly here in the UAE.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Size Business Breakfast.
We're talking Valentinonomics.
Love is in the air. Love is in the air. Oh.
Love is in the air, and that is good news for our next guest because he is an online retailer who specialises in gifts. He is Ritesh Talani, regular guest on the Business Breakfast, the co-CEO and founder of Joy Gifts. Morning, Ritesh.
Morning.
So, the story we're looking at, the research, is that millennials are the ones who are spending big on Valentine's this year. People between the age of 24 and 39, the Gen Yers, if you like, will spend an average 764 dirhams on two things: entertainment, such as posh meals or hotel stays, and gifts. What are you seeing?
So we do see millennials spending a lot of money. In fact, that makes up half of all our sales. You know, particularly around the 25 to 34 range, in fact. So even younger than the data that you have. Having said that, we do see the basket size being quite a bit higher for the older generations. And that, I think, comes down to, you know, they just have more money, right? And they are just as romantic, if not more.
So let's look at some of the data that you found from previous Valentine's and also this year. In terms of those millennials, the 25 to 34-year-olds, to use your phrase, basket size, how much are they typically spending?
So we see an average basket size of roughly $85. So we try to measure our data in dollars. And that's what we see across the board. Millennials will spend a little bit less than that, and older generations might spend a little bit more than that.
$85 being 300-ish dirhams.
Sure, yes.
That kind of ballpark. So what are they spending money on this year?
So this year, compared to maybe previous years, we saw a lot of flowers. Then we saw a shift towards bundles with flowers in them. And now we see a shift towards bundles with maybe flowers in them. So we see them buying things like gourmet products. We see a lot of personalized items, actually. So gifts which have some sort of sentimental, you know, value attached to them, a special message of some sort signifying a special date maybe. So for example, we have these chocolates, the hollow heart-shaped chocolates with a special message inside them. They come with a hammer. You break them, and so it's personalized.
And full disclosure, Ritesh brought one of those in for us. We have just knocked the bejesus out of it in the green room on the Dubai Eye studio and put it on Instagram. What was the message, Tom?
Happy Valentine's Day from all the team at Joy Gifts, which was very much appreciated. I think that's the only Valentine's card I'm going to get this year, so appreciate that one. I wanted to ask you about one of the gifts you did last, and the sort of the idea, because you mentioned there about sort of originality. People want us to do things a little bit different. You did that thing last year, the gift of you, sending. So basically, this was sending yourself in a box to your loved one, and then springing out of the box. Doing that again this year? Did it go down well last year?
It went really well last year. It's just a bit of a logistical challenge on a day like Valentine's Day. I mean, you have to understand the context. So we see a spike of 15 to 20x over our daily average order count on Valentine's Day. The whole world is being romantic on one day. So we're not, I mean, most companies aren't built for that kind of operational challenge, right? But we've managed to get around it. We have a lot of technology in place. Our fleet has scaled since then as well. But nonetheless, you know, it's very difficult to kind of execute on an experience like that. We've become really good at it, and we're happy to do it any other day of the year.
Yeah.
But on this day, we want to make sure everyone gets their gifts on time.
So joking apart, how do you do that? Joy Gifts, I mean, we've been talking to you for several years now, from when you were a startup. Now you're a relatively mature mature business. How do you scale up to do 15 to 20 times the normal amount of business in one 24-hour period?
So we do partner up with a number of logistics companies to help us on days like this, but we have our processes. We make sure we train them. We're controlling the quality. You know, we get updates on status and make sure that it's updated within our system as well, so our customers can, you know, they know when the product is actually delivered. So we've figured out a way to integrate them into our processes and systems. So that's very important. Now, as you scale up across the region, as we have, we're now in 21 cities across 7 countries. That becomes a little bit more challenging as we grow bigger and bigger. But we've managed to figure out the right formula.
Can I ask a quick question about Saudi Arabia? Because we mentioned this, always talked about this earlier in the week, the fact that the normalization of Valentine's Day celebrations in Saudi Arabia in recent times has seen an area of opportunity for retailers over there. You're in Saudi Arabia, is it?
Absolutely. So we love Saudi Arabia. They're very romantic. And we see more than half of our sales now coming from Saudi, which is very promising. Valentine's Day has become a little more acceptable there, or rather, I should say, even more acceptable. People were celebrating it anyway, and they refer to it as the Festival of Love.
Okay.
But now it's celebrated even more openly, which is fantastic.
Quite right. Yeah.
Finally, the boring business breakfast grown-up question about how your business is doing. I was looking into Joy Gifts yesterday. The most recent kind of corporate story I could see from you was a couple of years ago when you raised a couple of million dollars in seed funding. I haven't seen anything since then, but I'm sure things are going on behind the scenes. Where do we stand now with Joy Gifts as a corporate entity?
So we've actually raised more money since then. We just decided not to make a splash about it. We're head down, you know, building the business and growing it. We've raised $2.7 million so far as part of our seed round, so we expanded it because we saw the growth opportunity. And we have some exciting news coming up shortly, which I'd love to share with you when the time is right.
Go on, no one's listening. It's just us.
So good. Valentine's Day.
but in the meantime, though, we are continuing to scale across the region. We have a lot of new technological innovations coming up. For example, augmented reality. Soon you'll be able to see, you know, what flowers will actually look like on your table, how big they are from different angles and so on. And we have a lot of other really cool innovations coming up as well. So augmented reality is, in fact, coming in just a few days.
Looking
very excited about it.
An augmented reality Valentine's Day. I'm not sure how romantic that is.
I'll tell you what, I'm signing up already.
I guess it's the way
that solves a lot of the problems.
Ritesh, great talk to you. Appreciate your time. Ritesh Talani,
so
co-chief executive of Joy Gifts.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.